Hey, Alex.
Hi, John.
You know what I hate?
What's that?
Books.
I don't mind books, but the one that when you put them on a light table causes, I don't know, Satan to go in you and the world end, not a fan.
Oh, I thought you liked Harry Potter.
Oh. And we watched In the Mouth of Madness. Nobody makes me crazy. I've not seen this movie before, and now I have seen it.
The end.
Let me tell you, John, this is a strange film.
Yeah.
So before we even get into anything, the main choice that fucks me up is they invent this author, and this is done in a very H.P. Lovecraft kind of way, but they invent an author that is essentially an ersatz Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
He is the world's most famous author. Like in the 80s, Stephen King was. There was articles about him. Are his words weaving a spell on the minds of youth? All the Stephen King shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bring up Stephen King more than once in this movie to point out that, no, he's bigger than Stephen King.
Yeah.
It is a fucking baffling decision. Just have him be an ersatz King. You can even mention, oh, well, he got hit by a car and they disappeared and that's why we don't know where... Like, you could... It's so easy to put a one to fucking one on top of this. Yeah. And it is... baffling that
but he's not Stephen King. He's better than Stephen King. How would you know that he was better than Stephen King if he was Stephen King?
You could say better than Dean Koontz.
Anyone is better than Dean Koontz.
I mean, that's not true.
No, it's not. I used to read his books on airplanes all the time.
Yeah, me too. Not on airplanes, though. I didn't grow up wealthy like you, flying around in your air cars.
Oh, no. This was the little ride outside of grocery stores. I used to sit in an airplane, and it would shake me around.
Oh, wow. Ooh, look, Mr. Bragg, I have a quarter.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, we were rolling in it.
This movie starts off with the most generic rock song I've ever heard in my life.
That's John Carpenter, baby.
I was assuming, yeah.
And this...
Someone that maybe heard a couple metal songs, and then went, yeah, I got it. And,
no, this is
he didn't get it.
It's very much John Carpenter. It's the John Carpenter I don't like. Like this, I'm not a huge fan of the intro to or the theme to Big Trouble in Little China either. When he gets all rocking, I like his more synth stuff. And it's funny because like you think of all the number of ways this movie could go, especially like the way that a lot of horror movies are now with that kind of more cold and empty and more ambient kind of thing, and John Carpenter's gonna John Carpenter, baby. He's just gonna throw some guitar licks all over that.
I mean, it's fine, whatever. It sounds like a temp track, but it was the 80s. It probably hit a little harder.
It was the 90s.
This is the 90s. Oh, yeah, this is 94. Jesus, 94. This movie feels like 87.
Yeah, well, it's John Carpenter.
But
he has a mode.
The other aspect of that is the rest of the movie isn't rock.
No.
There's no... For some reason, it opens and closes with this, like, rock, and then the middle is just... I mean, you've got demons and shit. Why not just throw some fucking sick riffs?
Yeah. I don't know, because even on some of his later albums... Because John Carpenter is no longer making movies and just makes soundtracks to movies he would maybe one day make, just doing some music stuff. And if you listen to those, like, some of those would be so much more fitting for it.
Yes.
Because this is probably my I spoiler, I enjoy this movie, but this is probably my least favorite of his Apocalypse trilogy, which is The Thing, Prince of Darkness, and this. And those have
which
much better soundtracks.
Which one was Prince of Darkness?
Prince of Darkness is the one where Alice Cooper has a bit role in it, and the Satan is actually a pile of goo in the basement of a church.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it's The Thing, Prince of Darkness, and this. Yeah, this is the worst one of those three. Yeah, that's not even a...
Yeah, you're not going to come close to The Thing, any of his other movies. Yeah, and I like John Carpenter a lot, but The Thing
now,
is...
No, have we done a John Carpenter before?
No, this is, I believe, the first one.
Okay, so I'm going to just be shocked on Mike for a second. He wrote Assault on Precinct 13?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that was like his first one. His first like big movie.
That is surprising to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so after his first few movies, he really didn't do... It just kind of goes to shit.
Yeah, this is his last, I would also say this is his last, like, decent movie. Because then there's the vampires with a dollar sign and Ghosts of Mars and, no thanks.
And this is after, or this is before Escape from LA, which is it's got to be up there with the worst movies ever.
I wouldn't go that far with it, but it's certainly not great. And
it was a bit of an exaggeration. I was trying to say the worst movies he's ever directed.
Oh yeah.
But my dumb fat mouth said other words, mm-hmm. and I went, I'm just going to go with it.
Go with it, yeah.
Yeah, but then I was like, this is not a defendable position, so I had to get to my bit of a misspeaking. This, I think I kind of, okay, how do I word my feelings on this film? I think the best way is by a heavy metal song. Sound like a cat. I like kind of loved this movie, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's objectively bad.
Right. Yeah.
It's not good. Like, it's not well made. Sam Neill is pretty terrible in it. John Glover, I think, is the only one that puts in a performance that's correct for the film. Everybody else isn't there. Well, the kids are creepy. Okay. We can give them that. Oh, and the guy that plays Richard Bachman is all right too.
Oh, Jürgen Prochnow now.
Yeah. Yeah. Blame it on Kane. We're on like a Kane kick recently.
What? What was the last one?
Poltergeist 2.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. No, see, I like Sam Neill in this, but compared to some of his other roles, which I'm hoping, well, I won't get into that because I want to save that for October. But I like Sam Neill well enough in this, and I also like that. Like, this isn't that long after Jurassic Park that he's in this movie.
Yeah.
But like I really liked it in high school, but it's not aged as well. And you can see a lot of the kind of budgetary restraints on stuff.
It looks very, very inexpensive.
Yeah. But I do like the creature effects. All the physical effects are really cool.
There's a couple really good spots of that. Yeah.
Some of it is just what I was kind of getting into later, like just the mode of horror. Now this kind of movie would be treated a lot differently. I don't hold that against it because I'm kind of tired of all horror movies sort of being the same. And I like that, much like Total Recall, this is a movie that deals with some like kind of weird big ideas in a very dumb way. And when I say dumb, I mean like a approachable sort of way, you know, because Total Recall is like, what if your entire reality isn't real and all this stuff. And this has that too, but it's just captured more in a straight up horror movie.
Yeah. Okay. Let me pause here for 1 second. Sam Neill, was he in that movie where like space demons have an orgy?
Yes.
That we did.
Event Horizon.
Okay. Because I've like when this performance felt familiar to me, mm-hmm. and I feel like it's the exact same performance, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't hate it.
Yeah.
It just, every time he's on screen, which is most of the movie, my thought process is, oh boy, would I like somebody else to be playing this part. I don't know who, mm-hmm. but somebody not very Sam Neill. The question, so I don't know him from interviews. I've never heard an interview with him. Is his accent like slightly Australian, or is this him trying to do an American accent?
No, I think he's like just being Australian here. Like, okay. That's basically what it sounds. He is the only person worth following on Twitter.
Oh, is he good?
He runs, he lives on a farm and like has like a winery, and like he's, since he's acting, he'll post some stuff of like being on set or something like that, but it's just really sweet and very nice. Okay. Like, it's him like hanging out with a pig, and I love it.
Fuck yeah. Where do you go, Sam Neill? Yeah, okay, that's cool, that, because it's one of those things of, I guess that's what, like, newscaster Australian sounds like. Because it's so, like, it's almost American English, but it's, like, there's words that are so obviously Australian.
Yeah, like, are you blowing this accent? Can you not hold it? Or are you, you know, like, are you trying to do an American accent badly? It's...
No, I felt like that's kind of Australian neutral, you know. I mean, I guess let's start with John Glover. One of my favorite That Guy actors.
Love that guy.
I wish he was David in the movie Warner, more.
One of my other favorite That Guy actors.
Now, David Warner was the guy that he's the one that's interviewing Sam Neill in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We open with them in an asylum, or him getting dragged into the asylum. He kicks a guy in the ghoulies, and it's for some reason brought up more than once afterwards.
Yeah.
And he gets thrown into the asylum cell, and then we've only just begun. Muzak plays over the intercom, and all the inmates start singing together, and he screams, "Oh God, not the Carpenters too."
Yeah.
Maybe we'll just spend the whole hour talking about that, because let's approach it from this angle. That's not the tone of the rest of the movie. We're introduced to, that's like a Dr. Horrible sing-along blog. That's a reanimator. That's a fun, over-the-top. That's what John Glover's doing. He's got big hair and a lab coat. Mm-hmm. And, oh, the people are singing along together and it's fucking wacky. And that tone just, it's gone. The movie does not follow up on it.
Right. Well, I think it changes what that is. Because, you know, he's like, oh, not the Carpenters too. Meaning, like, you're like, oh, ha-ha, they're playing the Carpenters. But it's that Sutter Kane has also invented the Carpenters. Like at the end, when reality has completely collapsed in on itself.
No, I love it. I love it. Okay, sorry. No. I mean, either way, it's still silly, but I love that. I love that reading so much better.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I took it anyway. Because
he's a massive Carpenters fan.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh no, you've written me to love the Carpenters.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Much better. Well done. You punched us up. You punched us up much better. Follow-up question.
Well, John Carpenter did not write this, by the way. This is Michael DeLuca, who is an exec at studios now. But
oh, all right. Well, that kind of answered my second question, because is that a joke? Because it's directed by John Carpenter?
Could be. I don't know. I don't know how you could not notice that if you are John Carpenter. But
it's not a good joke. Like, no. Even if it's not meant to be a joke, just choose a different light rock song. Don't do one that's, you know, like if there's a group called the Coppolas, Francis Coppola is not going to draw attention to it. Like it's not.
But I mean, like the song choice of "We've Only Just Begun" is perhaps deliberate. And I don't know if anyone does cover that besides the Carpenters.
I'm not a music guy, but I bet you something with the words "begun." I'm going to say there's somewhere between 6,000 and 7,000 songs.
Quite possibly.
It's like, well, no, they needed a song about going home. Well, let me just off the top of my head come up with 47.
Right. But I mean, I'm just saying it was a deliberate choice. Whether or not it was meant to be a joke or not, I'm not sure. I don't know how you don't notice that. But at the same time, like, it's hard to remember a time when everything wasn't self-referential. You know, like you could just have a movie.
Yeah. You're right.
I don't know. I can't go. Absolutely. That's not what they meant, but
no, I think you're right. I think I'm using the self-referential kind of meta society that we've lived in for the past, I don't know, 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Like not long after this movie came out, it started.
Yeah. So 94, you're right. It wouldn't be a self-referential John Carpenter joke. That's not,
yeah. But it might, you know, I can't deny it, but it's not. Yeah.
Though in the early part, one of the things I really like is it's positive. Do you think he's one of them?
Because
we don't know what's going on yet. We just think it's Sam Neill being brought into asylum. But it's the world is literally mid-apocalypse, and we don't know that yet.
Yeah.
We just think it's this one guy that's gone insane, which is, you know, this movie. I mean, we should probably talk about it. Well, finishing my point. Love that. I love that it's set up. I think this is one of the few, I've said on the show before, I think wrapping devices, bookend devices are generally lazy writing.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the exception to that. I think this is actually really well done starting it this way, because what you learn about that first scene by the end of the movie completely recontextualizes that first scene, mm-hmm. which I think is the effective way to do that bookending style.
And I think for it also works on a more meta level of being, if this is supposed to be this like H.P. Lovecraft type author, that so many of his flippant books are like told from this remove of like, well, now that I've escaped from my ordeal, let me write down what drove me insane.
Well, that's the other thing I want to bring up is the H.P. Lovecraft of it all. Is that although this is a kind of Stephen King 80s analog, the monsters and the references in it are H.P. Lovecraft. In fact, I think he refers to the old ones, which are the ancient elder gods.
I mean, if not specifically by name, I mean, they're certainly like, it's like they didn't have the copyright to the name, so they just described what they were. Because it's them. It's absolutely an old gods, elder gods thing.
Yeah, which is an interesting, I mean, it's not an interesting approach. It's a good approach. I'm trying to couch it. So here's something, I'll probably get lost in the edit, but one of the things I struggle with in my life, especially as a writer, is I have a hard time divorcing art from artist.
Mm-hmm.
So the second, H.P. Lovecraft gets brought into something, my thoughts aren't, oh, this is somebody that influenced generations of interesting writers. My thought is you actively, without any kind of equivocation, wrote down, oh, yeah, like, I hate black people. Mm-hmm. Jews are disgusting. Like, he's a vile piece of shit of a human. Like, yeah. H.P. Lovecraft is a garbage fire.
Yeah.
And it's hard for, like, the second I get an H.P., like, the hint, the little sniff of H.P. Lovecraft, like, I'd be like, ugh.
Yeah.
So I guess I just kind of wanted that on record because I'm confused a bit of this movie when I start liking something. It's like, no, but it's Lovecraft, but God damn it. Lovecraft is authoring Necronomicon and I love the Evil Dead, so.
Yeah. No, I absolutely understand that. And that's something that I think is increasingly in our society a thing we're talking about. And I don't know that there's a clear answer for that because there are some people that I'm like, yeah, well, but. And there's others where I'm like, no, absolutely not. That guy's a piece of shit.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty forgiving of, at the, like, if you were what would be considered evil now, but it was the norm for the time, I'm not forgiving you for your actions, but, like, if you're just the average person in a shitty society,
right.
I can kind of get my head around it. But, like, H.P. Lovecraft was, like, shitty times. You were, like, extra, like, you had to try to be that shitty, you know? All right, so here's something, and this is probably equally controversial to my H.P. Lovecraft is a horrible human take.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Neill gets put in the asylum, and he asks for one request, a black crayon.
Yes.
And he crayons up all the walls and his face and his apron with crosses. I'm just saying, hey, John, why not one cool S? Can you have a little Stussy right in the middle? I mean, come on, buddy.
I think it'd be cooler if it was all cool S's. He's like, I finally have the time to master this.
I mean, it protects you about as much as that fucking empty bullshit symbol.
Yeah, which was interesting because, like, this is it's not a thing where it recontextualizes it later. It's this is a man, a pretty faithless man in general. Like, he believes the reality and stuff.
Yeah.
Why would he put any stock, whatever, in a cross? Particularly when they're coming, when they, you know, he's been to the church that Sutter Kane has taken over. So what does that even tell you about the power of that thing? But it looks neat. It looks cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real reason. But the reason I didn't go down that rabbit hole was, I think it was in The Mummy where that one guy had, like, all of the different religious symbols around his neck just in case.
Yep.
And, like, Sam Neill, because he's from, like, a Western, you know, background, he's like, I guess Christianity, that's the one I'm looking for.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how many points the star has. I'm not even trying that. Just crosses.
So here's the thing, is I was raised Christian. And I loathe that religion to a deep, deep degree. Like, I really actively dislike it. But if the world starts going full demon, all of the weird pagan shit I've been into over the years, I think I'm probably just gonna rock a cross because, like, it's like, I mean, it's the big guy on the street, you know? It's if you need edible food and you're in a foreign country and you see a McDonald's, it's like, look, I don't like McDonald's, but I know what I can get there. I know that's the big thing. I know it's gonna be safe, and I feel like the cross is the McDonald's of religion.
Yeah, well, yeah, it'd be a bit like, well, okay, I'm convinced. All right, that's on me. All right. But like, so yeah, so the whole gimmick is that Sam Neill is this insurance fraud detective guy, and he's hired by this publishing company.
That guy from Wayne's World.
He's hired by the guy from Wayne's World. What guy from Wayne's World?
The guy, the old guy from Wayne's World. You know where he had to do the acting session? I don't know. He's some old actor.
Oh,
Ronald Reagan or somebody like that.
Yeah, Charlton Heston.
No, John Huston.
It was John Huston, who's been dead for many years up to this point.
Yeah.
No, Charlton Heston hires him to go, Sutter Kane's gone missing and they want to go find him. And Sam Neill's like, I don't read this crap. Books are dumb. And, so I support
him
there.
Sound familiar?
Yep. And he's right. Cause look at what happens when people start reading books.
Yeah. By the way, audience at home, you can't see this cause we don't broadcast the Skype call that we're on, but John is covered just head to tits. And I'm assuming below, but that's all I can see on camera, in crosses right now.
Uh-huh.
He has multiple crosses on each nipple, which, by the way, I think you had to have help with.
No, I did it. It's all me. I mean, the one was easier than the other one because I am right-handed, so it's a little awkward, but.
I think painting those miniatures is really paying off.
Yeah, it's worked out.
So with that in mind, I assume you did your dick too. Hey-o! I'm making fun of your dick size.
You are.
Because we're from the 80s.
But speaking of dick size, anyway, so he thinks it's all staged. And I do like that opening scene where he's grilling the insurance fraud guy before he gets hired on to do this. There's a lot of, like, John Carpenter regulars in this, and that dude is Peter Jason, who's been in a bunch. He's in Prince of Darkness, for example.
But I always like that. Is that the guy that's being a scammer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's like in Deadwood. He's been in a bunch of stuff, but he's getting grilled. And then there's the scene following that where you're introduced to the things that are going on, because he's talking to the guy that brought him onto this job, Bernie Casey. They have a conversation, and this guy comes across the street. You see like him wielding an axe, and he's got this crazy look in his eye, and he comes up and he asks, "Do you read Sutter Kane?" and tries to kill Sam Neill, and the cops just gun that guy down. Which this has a very anti-cop thing.
Yeah, which I'm on board for.
Which it permeates a lot of his work, because I mean, they live is all about like the structures need to be torn down, man. And
yeah, well, he's a right-thinking person.
Mm-hmm.
That guy that the axe through the window. Two things. One, so this came out in '94. I was 13 or 14 when this came out. When he said, "Do you eat Sutter Kane?" Uh-huh. I immediately flashed back like, "Oh, that was in the trailer."
Yeah.
Like, I remembered that voice, because they do that weird voice modulation on it. Of like, oh, shit, that was a trailer line, which was so weird, because that's, what, 20-something, 26,
yeah.
A million years ago. 36 years ago. I can't do math. But amazing that your brain works that way. But how good are those double iris fucking contact aesthetics lenses they have?
Yeah. It almost looked like goat's eyes, those, like, square pupils goats have.
Yeah, it's cool. It reminded me a little bit of Annihilation, where mm-hmm. the genetics start breaking down and you start seeing weird shit like that.
Yeah, and that, actually, it's funny that you mentioned the trailer thing, because that voice that he does, "Do you read Sutter Kane?" sounds like, in my mind, sounds like horror movie trailers from that time.
Yeah.
Of like, that would be the voiceover, is that voice. That's when you start to find out that the Sutter Kane guy's gone missing, and some of his books have a negative effect on people.
Yeah, so he sends them out on a mission to find Sutter Kane with the second in command, his editor for Sutter Kane's work, Linda Stiles. The reason I thought this movie was from the 80s is because he is just hitting the fuck out of her, hitting on the fuck. I don't know how you parse that sentence. He is flirting with her in a very 1950s, holy shit, this is harassment way.
Uh-huh.
They're waiting for an elevator, and he does the full "I'm standing too close and also putting my arm out and blocking your egress" move. And it is, mm-hmm. I am not there for it.
Yeah, it's a little dated. Much like her pantsuits.
But I mean, it's 94. I mean, I guess 94, that's still, but oof, that was, I mean, I guess good for our society that like we've grown enough to find that gross, but you know, I still had to sit through that shit. This is where we get our first dream sequence, which I think is one of the more effective things in this movie, where he has a dream about a cop just beating the shit out of a guy doing graffiti, and the guy's trying to graffiti, you see ICA. And then later, there's this repeated refrain of the people that have been kind of taken over or infected. They either say, "I can see you," or "he sees you," or "I can see you." And it's, you start to get that. And he wakes up from the dream and he looks over on the couch, and the cop has got like a nasty face or whatever on his couch. And then he re-wakes up, which I like how that plays through this whole movie. That mm-hmm. there's like three layers of like dream, and not in like a Inception way, just in a psychedelic way.
Yeah. Well, it's also a good way to sort of like make your footing a little more uneasy of what's going on, because it's like the dream within a dream thing that already you're kind of prepared to like, well, we're going to be messing with reality a little bit, because that happens again later on where he kind of wakes up a couple of times, or, you know, reality starts folding in on itself.
Now, I don't know how to word this. The good thing they didn't do is that the fact that they set up dream sequences, and I guess we're spoiling the ending. We're going out of order. Yeah. I'm spoiling the ending. I'm saying it right now. The fact that the ending is the world ends. I mean, it's a bummer ending.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't pull the "it was all a dream" switch.
Yeah.
There's no real room for interpretation. This is what's happening. Like, he's either he went fully insane or the world's over.
Right. Well,
at no point is it he's going to re-wake up.
Well, yeah. Is the world ending as in it's like the Matrix with these different levels of reality? Because it's like, well, is he just a character in the book? And in which case, does that mean just the book is ending?
Yeah.
Or is it the outside world, and or are those now one and the same?
Yes.
But either way, it's bad. It's not good.
But the key takeaway is there's not a stupid fake out. He wakes up at the end and which I was very concerned for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could have easily gone that way, and I'm glad it didn't.
Yeah. Here's I think you might understand this, and some of the audience at home will. The next kind of major plot point is he's trying to figure out where Sutter Kane is. And he goes to the bookstore and buys copies of his books. And he realizes that if he cuts out this line in all the covers and puts it together, it forms a map of New Hampshire. And I'm just going to say this, buddy. Magenta lines go on a separate fucking layer so you can turn it off during the printing process. And when it's cut out later with a die cutter or whatever aspect of your choice, you're not going to leave little pink edges. Sorry, maybe some of us know how fucking press works. All right?
Yeah, I have been owned. I used to like this movie. Now I don't.
I mean, seriously, dude, they left the cut lines on the fucking covers. That's bullshit.
It's sloppy.
What do you think? 10 people understood that joke?
I hope so. I hope at least high, right? 10. Yeah. I hope we hit double digits with that.
I'm just saying you click the little eye icon and it'll go away.
I liked that bit because it's kind of, it's just kind of like dumb adventure-y, which I like, which I kind of think like this movie is not, to me, this movie's not, it's a horror movie, but it's not scary. It's more like adventure horror. It's more, it's like Nightbreed, except better, where it's like, yeah, there's like horror elements, but it's not, we're not trying to scare you. It's more just, it's more spooky.
This is not better than Nightbreed.
I'm sorry. I forgot that was your favorite movie.
I mean, it's not my favorite movie, but this Nightbreed is a lot better than this.
Oh, I fully disagree. I do not like really? Nightbreed.
Oh God. I'd watch Nightbreed in a second over there. Not even like I dislike this, but Nightbreed is a fun quality movie. Now go back and listen to the episode. I don't know if that was my opinion back then.
It was not.
I tend to forget things.
But times change.
Oh, yeah. So I did like that map thing. I thought that was a fun deal. And also, I mean, who knows where New Hampshire is? I know that's not the joke, but I do enjoy that you pick like that or Rhode Island is like the most. Oh, yeah, that is a state, isn't it? Of states.
It would have been great the whole time. He's like, he's in Vermont because no one has any idea.
Going back to tone is I think my main complaint for this movie is it doesn't hit a tone. So it starts off with this silly Reanimator. I haven't seen Reanimator in a long time, so maybe it's not as silly as I remember it, but like...
Oh, Reanimator, silly.
Okay, so it starts off with that kind of tonally thing, with the asylum, with John Glover with big hair and a lab coat.
Guy getting kicked in the balls.
You're starting off that way. Then you go into the weird dreams and it starts to get like actual horror elements. You're like, okay, you can go that way. And now you've got this adventure side quest element. Okay, I guess we're going that way. And it just became this, you're stuck in the town thing. And then there's kind of traditional horror. And then there's body horror. And there's just too many tones and you just never land on one. So I found myself not being in a mood watching this. I didn't get to like fall into the movie because it just kept switching pace. And not in that fun way that keeps you anxious and you're like off kilter and the movie's freaking you out. It's just you didn't pick a tone properly. It just doesn't hit it right.
I think for me, it's just the lull of getting to the town and getting settled in the town. It hits some pretty cliched notes, but it's also, you've already pretty well established that things are ooky. Let's take that somewhere. And I think it spends a lot of time with just things being ooky. Cause like now you have her figuring it out and kind of being touched by it, but him not, but then him kind of figuring it out. And so it's kind of repeating that a little bit. Although I like her journey into just complete madness. Now it like hits her almost immediately.
Yeah, her stuff is good. I liked, once again, into town, you're right, that is a bad lull. I like all the stuff with Mrs. Pikeman,
Frances Bay. Always love to see her show up and stuff.
She's great. Yeah, she's one of those actresses that anytime she shows up, like, oh, yeah, it's her. I like her.
Yeah, you're Billy Madison's grandma. Or no, Happy Gilmore's grandma.
On the way into the town, let us not skip over. He inexplicably sings, what, the Star Spangled Banner? He sings, Say Can You See or something, right?
Yeah, it's one of those patriotic songs.
Okay.
It's in the public domain.
Yeah, I guess so. I really liked, except for the prosthetic they use, the gimmick of the little, she sees the little kid on the bike and then it turns into the little kid as an old man, but with a little kid's voice.
Yeah.
But boy, that old man prosthetic looks like shit.
Yeah. I am increasingly just not a fan of that. Even though the effects have largely gotten better, but that's just been a thing in a couple of horror movies lately that I've seen that's like, oh my God. It never works out. Like, that was one of my big things with Midnight Mass, is that the old age makeup on people. I'm like, what are you doing? You could have just cast an old person and then, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, that's more like Midnight Ass, am I right?
Yeah. That was us high-fiving through the internet.
Which was very impressive. Oh, God, are we in the mouth of madness?
No, we're in Ghost Dad, which is even worse.
I mean, is it?
Yeah. Talk about separating the art from the artist.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, but at least Ghosted posits like an afterlife that it's not like the Eldritch Horrors have destroyed all the world and your soul is going to be eaten for eternity.
But immortal Bill Cosby.
It's true.
You can
but he's
through
incorporeal,
phones.
So it's very unlikely, unless it's like a ghost scenario and that Tony Shalhoub looking guy could teach you how to move a penny on the train.
No, he's corporeal. I mean, like he's a ghost, but he can choke you and stuff. So he can do some damage.
Oh, I didn't realize it was sexy. All right. Yeah. I got to rewatch that movie. Bill Cosby, the most positive, nothing wrong about him, especially in regards to sexuality, man, that's ever.
One of my favorite realizations in this movie or reveals is that when they finally find, right, they find this church that was written, because they find this place Hobbs End, which is essentially like Stephen King's Castle Rock, this mythical town, or, you know, these made up in his books, but this, it turns out it's a real place. And it's weird to find out that all these things from the books are real, like, oh my God, I know there's a squeaky board here. And then there's this bizarre
church.
That
was a cool
town.
Sequence.
Yeah.
Where she's like, there's a painting behind you. That board's going to squeak. That was cool.
Yeah. And then like when he's like, if the books were real, there'd be a church out this window and there's just a barn. And she's like, no, it's from the east. And yeah, there's this like church with onion domes that looks very out of place, but I guess it was really there. But when they go to the church, a group of townsfolk come up, angry townsfolk, headed up by Wilhelm von Homburg, which you might recognize as Viggo from...
That's... Thank you.
And then he starts talking. You're like, oh, that's why they dubbed over your voice.
I could not place his stupid face, yeah. But I didn't want to look it up. Okay. Yeah, that's
that
what
is,
it was.
That
yeah.
is Viggo the Carpathian, and his real voice is very not that. So I think maybe if I had never seen that before, it wouldn't bother me as much, but he's not a great actor. He just has a very... He has a lot of face.
Yeah, he has a lot of face.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they go to the Black Church, mm-hmm. which is a great phrase. Very H.P. Lovecraft, very weird, abstract horror. And the guys roll up. They're like, Cain, give him back. Because apparently Cain has stolen one of their children.
Yes.
In a plot point that definitely in the movie. They're there watching it. And you meet, and then they keep opening and closing the door on the little kid. And then it turns into your first look of Sutter Kane, who looks like if Neil Gaiman was slightly older and slightly Garfunkel.
Yes. Yes. He's been Garfunkeled. Yeah. But yeah, it's very like a 90s idea of what a cool guy would look like.
And then Sam Neill, it's like, yeah, what are you going to do? Send dogs after me or the bees or the dogs with bees in their mouth? So that when it opens their mouth, the bees shoot out. Sorry. Anytime dogs attack people,
oh,
I think that scene.
Yeah. When the dogs get unleashed, when the hounds get unleashed. But I think the idea there is like, I kind of like the idea of that, like, well, you're being dropped inside this horror story that's happening. Cause they do later the Viggo guy is talks about how like it got to the kids first. So I think maybe Sutter Kane is infecting them with his evil brain stuff. I don't know. But it did seem like that was going to be more of a thing with that little boy than there was.
Yeah, it didn't go anywhere, but it also doesn't make sense that, okay, so if, I mean, yes, we'll just talk about it here. What we're dealing with is when you read the book, you get infected. But also he's writing it to make you infected, even if you don't read the book.
Well, it's
so
yeah.
Why
it's,
would the kids have read the books?
Yeah, I don't know that it's like that. That's the only way to do it. Because it's also it gets very confusing. Because it's also that these old ones have been telling him what to write, but he's now becoming God. So it's very unclear and very muddy.
Yeah. So the mechanism is, let's just walk through it a little bit. At some point, the old gods contact him,
mm-hmm.
and one presumes years ago. Because the rumors are out there that his books can make you act weird. Or when we heard that, are we already under the sway of his writing? And he wrote
right.
that his older books can even infect you.
Yeah. I have no idea. But it's like I'm leaning towards that because the whole thing is that he's written everything up to this, you know, like that there's no John Trent. The John Trent is a creation of Sutter Kane. So it's, but like, even then I'm not clear on that. And I don't necessarily want, I'm sure someone has made a 45 hour video about like explained, but like, I kind of like how it's messy like that. Cause that's weird.
And I'm fine with that. The scene later, I don't know. It's kind of around the spot where they find a tiny orange dinosaur in a gutter.
Mm-hmm.
And then people that read the book keep finding it in real life. I'm thinking of Periphery by Alex Bolan.
Oh, where can I find that book?
You know, it's available on Amazon.com, interestingly enough.
Interesting.
Link in the show notes. Although I wanted to plug Horrifically, and I did right there. You guys should read my books, or at least buy them and make me feel better. One of the weird things about writing kind of magical realism, strange, occulty stuff is, so I wrote in the book, there's a spot where the guy keeps finding these little plastic orange dinosaurs. It's not a big plot point. It's literally a thing. But when that book was getting popular, or, you know, as popular as going to get, I had like in upwards of 15, maybe 20 people send me pictures of these random orange dinosaurs they found. Like, it manifested itself into life. Mm-hmm. In the back of my head while watching this, I'm like, oh boy, I'm glad I write like kind of not as severe of books, because like little, you know, I don't write Eldritch gods that are coming back to like, you know, break all your bones, grow an eye in the middle of your head, and like, you know, eat your children. You know, it's
time to write the book. Alex is super hot and everyone loves him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Alex visits the blowjob factory.
But no, that is honestly one of the reasons why I wanted to check this out, is that was in the back of my head, was your specifically the tiny dinosaur thing. And that kind of like writing manifesting itself in reality.
I have so many notes about the fact that they just put a page at a light table and that's the book infecting you.
Yes.
They literally just took a light table, like you'd have it like a print shop. Yeah. Just put a page of the book on some fucking acrylic, and that's how you're manifesting the universe. One of the things that annoys me most about movies is when someone's having something go wrong while they're driving.
Mm-hmm.
Their instinct isn't just apply the brake.
Yeah,
like in this one, when they find a way to, she's like speeding up, and like, oh, I'm having freak out. She's like, just apply the brake. At one point, she leans her head out of the window. You see the car is floating on clouds and the wheels are moving. Hit the fucking brake. It's fucking maddening.
If you think you're in midair, is hitting the brakes going to work?
It's not going to change anything. At worst, all you've wasted is a few calories pushing the fucking pedal down. Every fucking movie has this. Not every movie, but there's so many movies where they're like, oh, I can't stop the car. I can't. Just stop. Just it's like fine. Literally just apply the brake gently.
Yeah.
And it's like you've solved the, it's a bugbear. Is that the phrase?
Bugbear?
Bugbear. Yeah. It's a bugbear.
There's a lot of this. Like, I think that's probably why I don't like the initial getting into town is there's a lot of, not the like, oh, what a misunderstanding, but the like, just tell someone you're with him. Just tell him what you're seeing. You know what I mean? Like, he's not necessarily going to believe you, but there's a lot of her like experiencing these and just being like, did you see those children running at me? I didn't see any kids. Well, I'm sure that's nothing. I just manifested a bunch of children.
There's a lot of convenient not talking about what's happening, which is a staple of horror movies. One of the things around this time where Linda sneaks away to go to the church and she kind of falls into Sutter Kate's sway and she reaches behind him and he's got a malignant on the back of his head.
Yeah.
It's so bad. I mean, it's whatever. I get it. This movie didn't have a huge budget, or they hired the wrong guy to do the effects, but it's so bad.
See, I like the effects, but I do think that one looks dated, and it also
some of them come across.
Is what what even is that?
The grandma, like, when she's cool? Tentacle-y looks really good. Like, there's some really neat prosthetics going on, but that one, no.
I do like, later when the whole, like, cavalcade of them. Because they also, like, shoot it very closely so you don't see a lot of so like, I think it's the end of Hellraiser where they're like, she's being chased by this thing down a hallway and it's like, this is a puppet and it looks very bad.
Oh yeah, that part. Yeah. On that note, I did really like the when all of her bones get broken and she's walking backwards and her head's the wrong way.
Yeah.
That I thought was pretty cool.
Well, that's an interesting thing too, because eventually she's taken over by Sutter Kane. She's like falls, either realizes what's going on. It's not real clear, but she's bad now. At one point, she gets out of the car and her head's on backwards. And every movement she makes sounds like her bones are breaking.
Yeah.
But in reality, if you look at it, it's just that they got a gymnast to wear a backwards mask. And it's cool, but like just doing like one of those like bridges, but then walking and then turning over. It's not a move that the body couldn't make without, other than the head being twisted, you know, your body can just do that. But it's almost like in any 80s movie where there's a robot disguised as a human, if you reveal that person is a robot, either like tear off their faceplate, anything, every move they make is now accompanied by a yeah. sound. So it's just like she's, oh, nope, she's in the crackle mode. She's got to be crackling. Yeah. But it's a very, it's sounded like it hurt. So upsetting. Yeah. It's, yeah. Ugh.
It's visceral.
Yeah. And I think particularly like as you get older and your body starts making those noises anyway, you're like, oh God.
I don't know. I'm fucking 27 and have abs. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And they crack.
When he's talking to Viggo the Carpathian, mm-hmm. and he says, I can't remember if what came first, the book, or if we came first.
Mm-hmm.
That actually gave me a bit of panic attack of like, yeah. that's actual psychosis. Like that's the tone I want this movie to be.
Yeah.
Of like the walls of reality are breaking down, but you're subtly aware of it. Cause also you don't, I mean, he doesn't talk about it, Sam Neill does, of not really sure if he's a character in the book. I mean, Sam Neill screams that he isn't, but is he a character that was overwritten? And yeah, oh boy, yeah.
Like I was saying, it's like this could be a lot more cerebral than it is.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I'm glad that it's not, but there are times that, yeah, it would be a little bit more frightening. Have you ever read any Thomas Ligotti?
No, you know my feelings on those people.
Yes. Authors.
Authors, yeah.
But he's like a weird horror writer, or weird fiction, I guess they call it. And so many of those guys, like, I find their stuff so, like, self-consciously obtuse. Like, they're influenced by Lovecraft, so they want to make their writing as, like, dense and as irritating as his. And it drives me nuts. And so I think that might be one of the reasons why I like this. Like, what if you were just a character in this person's book,
yeah.
told to a dumb guy? that's on my level.
When they're trying to escape the town, one, he does the gentlemanly thing and just beats her until she's unconscious and drags her out of the, yeah, very gallant.
Yeah.
But I think this is the best visualization of that kind of hack thing of you drive one way through a town and then come back in, you know, that cyclical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of you see the roadway kind of glowing and fluorescing and kind of turning orange.
Yeah.
And the next thing kind of darkens and then reloads almost, and you're driving in the wrong direction towards a crowd. It was really, I think that's the best I've ever seen that done. And then it's been done all, you know, from X-Files to Fringe to that's tropey as trope, but really nice visualization.
And I just liked that, because they would frequently go for like, just like the flash of white, which by now is totally cliched, but I do like that. Like you said, that sort of reloading of things. Not just this like seamless entity loop. It's that like, yeah, you've reached the edge. I think that's a little bit more claustrophobic way to do that than having it be a Mobius strip.
He goes into confessional with Kane, and there's the meeting of the minds or whatever. And Kane says that he sold so many more books that more people believe in him than the Bible.
Uh-huh.
And it occurred to me that it goes with, this is what I was trying to look up. I was trying to remember, is it Grant Morrison that saw Constantine? One of the comic writers from the 80s that I get confused with each other is like a chaos magician kind of guy.
Alan Moore is definitely a chaos magician.
It's Alan Moore or Grant Morrison. They're both the same kind of ilk. Mm-hmm. But the point is they called it a hyper sigil, and they made their comic into this a sigil is a magical work where you kind of like make a cool design and focus your intent onto it. So he made his comic book this hyper sigil to like create a new, you know, put his will into the world, you know, yada, yada. This is too complicated to talk about in this short of time. But one of the kind of signals that it was working is that he saw one of his characters in real life, John Constantine. He literally saw him walking, same guy, like he was in real life. I mean, I guess you would say had a psychotic break.
Right.
For me, I think it's something else. But I like that kind of concept of maybe the other way to read this is that he did that. Like Sutter Kane literally is a kind of magic practitioner, and he made billions of people focus their intent on this world, and now it's manifesting, you know, into reality.
Well, that's the other reason I wanted to watch this, is that well, now, this isn't a reason, but this is also in Warhammer 40K, the orcs, their whole thing is that anything works as long as they believe it does. Cars go faster when they're red because they believe that red is a faster color.
Oh, that's actually kind of fun.
Yeah, right, it's because they're big dumb idiots and like that's
yeah.
But it's like, welcome to 2022. Is that just the dumbest thing you've imagined and can manifest that's out there now? Like, we're all making our little bespoke realities.
Yeah.
And that, you know, QAnon and all that. It's just if enough people believe it, then it's true. And it's also goes even further than that in like the reality in general. And that and this is a very rushed, inarticulate way of saying this, but just that like all this shit's made up. all of our social contracts, money, all this stuff, yeah. it's made up and it's only optional because we agreed to it and we believe into it. And so what if that all breaks down? What if that gets supplanted by something else? And that something else is in fact, instead of QAnon,
sovereign citizenry.
It's Sutter Kane. And that's frightening because you're seeing a little bit of that here, is that not just, what is it? The now is the time of monsters. That a new world is struggling to be born.
Yes. So anyway, we want you to listen to Joe Rogan.
Yeah. And buy our nootropics.
After he meets with Kane in the vestibule, or what do you call those? A confessional.
Yeah.
He gets, this town didn't exist before I wrote it, and neither did you. This is a big thing. But there's a beautiful sequence of Sutter Kane. The graphics do not hold up, but he rips his face like Sam Neill was ripping the poster earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He rips his face, and it becomes like paper-like. And it goes away and becomes a portal. And the outside of the portal, like leaves coming out, are book pages.
Yeah.
I'm a fucking writer. So like that kind of shit is like just, oh, well, thank you. I appreciate you pandering directly to me. It's like just literally the written word breaking into it.
Yeah.
I thought that was a cool sequence.
Well, and that they don't, that it's just a hole behind there and that there's something lurking back there and you don't get to see what. Because, well, he does it in front of the door that's apparently holding back the old ones. But I do, yeah. And when you see the other side of it, when Sam Neill is looking through, you can see paragraphs and
text. And Stiles is sitting there reading from the book, saying he walks up to the hole and looks down and sees the. It's a nice sequence. And again, I want a whole movie, not of that sequence, but of that tone. Like that'd be fine. Mm-hmm. Not this mishmash.
Yeah,
and I keep going back to tone, but yeah.
But it's hard, and I don't know that how you would do it exactly because. Having that more sort of like basic B movie thing and then going off in this weird direction versus like, it's all weird and somber. And then you go, oh no, also yeah. reality is bad. You know, there's different ways to do it, but, I do like that. And then what you're talking about, the tearing thing at the beginning. Yeah. When he has that confrontation with the cop, like he sees a Hobbs End poster and he's like, there's a tear in it. And like, he looks to see what's behind it. And then at the end, after he's like manages to escape and he tears the thing off, it's a poster for In the Mouth of Madness. It's his face. And yeah. I like that. It's like, wait, so this was underneath this other poster. This was already there.
Well, there's a time jump aspect too. So like when he gets back into town, what to the movie seems like he has just gone back into town to meet with Charlton Heston.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlton Heston's like, you gave me the copy of that book months ago. Like, it's already a number one. It's been out for weeks, you know, so there was this giant time jump.
Yeah.
And also Charlton Heston no longer remembers Stiles.
Yeah. Reality has been interesting. Reality has either been rewritten or just it always was. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, we skipped. So on the way back, he stops at this motel and tries to burn the manuscript. Like, first he tries to leave it, then it gets mailed to him somehow. And then he tries to burn it. And he has this cool dream sequence where Sutter Kane in his mind is like, do you know my favorite color is blue? And he wakes up and like everything is completely blue.
Yeah.
Which reminds me of The Terravada Machine and other stories by Alex Bolan. You know, there's a scene in one of the stories where there's a dull blue light that plays a major, major role. So anyway, you should probably pick that up on Amazon.com.
Oh, I would love to. Buy a lot of copies, actually, just in case I want to read it more than once.
I'll tell you this, if you buy more than one copy, I'll get more than one monies for it.
Oh, interesting.
And I don't know if guilt or making you feel bad will sell copies, but I will say my last month's check from Amazon was 33 cents.
Nice. Ooh.
Yeah. Big money. I'm rubbing my thumb. John, I don't know if you can see this. I'm rubbing my thumb against my pointer and middle finger in the money motion.
Oh, it's the money. He means the money.
Means the money. Oh, the money. This means the money. Okay. So there's a time slip.
Before we get too far away from the town thing, do you know who that paper boy is? Because after he like wakes up and he's got the manuscript, but he's in like a crossroads and a different kid on a bike shows up. And he's like, do you know where Hobbs End? And his kid's like, I don't know.
No, I do not know who that is.
Hayden Christensen.
Really?
Yeah. Mr. Too Damn, Darth Vader himself.
Wow. You know, I just saw him yesterday in Obi-Wan.
Oh. Oh, he's on that show? Oh,
yes.
Good for him. I'm glad they're not like, nah, nuts to that guy. We don't, you know.
No, they're trying to make the prequels better.
All right. Well, good luck with that.
Leave that there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Godspeed, buddy. The next note I have, and I know, oh, yeah, yeah, so he's been out for a while. Then Sam Neill goes to a bookstore and just fucking axes a dude in the head.
Yeah, he just commits a murder.
For no reason.
Yeah, there's not like he tries to stop the book from getting out or something. No, he just murders a guy that read it.
And that's how he got to the asylum in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I guess we skipped over it. Somewhat established over like radio broadcasts and stuff that like the virus, the infection of Sutter Kane's work is spreading across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And but we discussed that earlier. And then, he breaks out of the asylum, or the asylum gets broken down, however you want to describe it. And he goes to the movie of The Mouth of Madness, and it's scenes from earlier in the movie.
Yeah.
And Sam Neill just starts hysterically laughing at it in a kind of I've gone mad ways.
So you, at that moment, you are watching the movie In the Mouth of Madness about Sam Neill, or about John Trent, who's now in the book. There's just like so many layers of reality happening yeah. there that I like that sort of, it's his reaction at the end. Yeah, it's that I've gone crazy. It's like kind of laughing and crying. Is it that like, oh, everything's over, I've realized I'm just a character in this book, this is all happening now? Or is it this like I'm trapped in a different reality I can't get out of? There's just the trying to wrap your head around all the things that are happening there would drive anyone crazy.
Not me. I've already given my soul to the old ones years ago. So.
Oh, how'd you swing that?
Me and Narla Holthap went to middle school together.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was blessed to be white male and next to an old one in social studies. I got nothing else on The Mouth of Madness, to be honest with you.
I enjoy it. It's not an amazing movie. Like I said, it's my least favorite of his Apocalypse trilogy, but I think it's, like I said, it's smart stuff done dumbly, and I'm always a sucker for that. If it's done, how do I want to word this? More accessible, I guess. Like they tried to package it in a way that's still interesting, but not so hoity-toity.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the movie. Like I was, you know, I think a little hard on it a bit, but like, I think it's one of those films where I love the ideas, I love what's happened, mm-hmm. but I'm not saying I want a remake, but I kind of want the themes of this movie done better.
Yeah.
Well, but I enjoyed it. I mean, I'd watch it again. It was, yeah, fun movie.
As long as anyone gives John Carpenter money, he's fine with it. Like that is, yeah, that is his whole thing. Just like, did you pay me? Fine. I don't care now. And much respect for that guy.
Yeah, exactly. And much respect for his name being the most Christian references you can possibly slam into one name. John and Carpenter. Yeah. And his middle name is Iscariot.
Well, yeah, I was going to say without naming the himself.
I am that I am. Yeah, its middle name is Yeshua. Yeshua bin Yahweh. John.
Yes.
Recommendations for next... No, not recommend. What do I say? How do I say this? What, do you got anything to recommend? I combined recommendations of what are we watching next time into one bad sentence.
While watching it, I didn't love Cronenberg's new Crime of the Future, but I haven't stopped thinking about it since I saw it. So that's something. I kind of want to see it again, but I don't know. It hinges heavily on performance art, and I have a problem with that. But so that's a recommendation with an asterisk. And then otherwise, because the new season's out, I don't remember what happened in the first two. I've been rewatching Barry, and man, that show's so good. I cannot really say enough good things about that show.
NoHo Hank is a favorite of mine. He played Victor Zsasz in Gotham.
I saw that.
And it was terrific.
For a show about a hitman, it has just unfathomable levels of empathy, and I love it. Like even like his goofball class that could just be complete caricatures of everything. There's love in how those things are written and performed, and everyone is great. There's not a character that I don't like seeing.
I do recommend Barry. This was not my favorite season.
Okay, I haven't. But I'm not
still
there yet.
Better than most. Okay. You know, I'm not giving any details away. But still better than most shows. My recommendation is somewhat odd. I say that every week because I rarely run into the things I like. But I watched the first two episodes of Miss Marvel on Disney Plus, which is a superhero that I have no association with. Mm-hmm. I don't know the character at all. It was well after my time reading comics. And it seems like it would be wonderful for young people.
That's the impression that I'm getting from a mutual friend of ours. Did not like Romeo. Was like, I don't like this. And everything I've read, it makes me seem like it's not for you.
Yeah, it is not for me, but it is because the whole thing is she's I think she's Pakistani, but she's Muslim.
Mm.
She's kind of a nerd. an actual kind of socially ostracized nerd. Like, she goes to comic book conventions and stuff. And it just seems like a lot of young female identifying people would identify mm-hmm. with her.
Yeah.
Especially young Muslims. And it just seemed really sweet. It was man, if I was a little kid, I'd be really into this. But as a 41-year-old man, I didn't dislike it, but it's not.
Yeah.
This is not targeted at me.
Well, and I think that's an interesting thing, because with Marvel sort of being the monoculture of mainstream popular culture, for what that exists now, everything's so striated and everyone's in their own little bubbles, but movies are Marvel, TV Marvel. If that's everything, at a certain point, it's going to branch, it's going to try to get even more people. So it's going to be stuff that's not just for superhero nerds in the way that we understand them. It's not going to be something for 42-year-old men. You can have that and it's fine,
Which is, it was nice to kind of go that way. I don't know that I'm going to continue watching. I mm-hmm. might, when the show's over, watch some recaps or whatever, because there's not a bar against someone our age watching it, but it's a little, anyway, I guess, saying, for our young audience and for our, parents out there, I would recommend it if you had younger, I don't know what age is appropriate. I don't know fucking anything, mm-hmm. about, I've never known love and will never have children, so I know nothing about this.
Sure.
Buy my books, please. That's all I have. That's my recommendation. Maybe going back and modifying a previous recommendation. I was a little rough on Better Call Saul this season. I don't mm-hmm. remember if I said it on the air, but I've said it to everybody I know. And I watched the final episode of the before the midseason break. And man, did that make me rethink the first few episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was incorrect. Now I understand why they were like this. Now I understand the pacing. My bad. Please let me publicly recant that opinion. I will give no details about anything that happens. Suffice it to say, the mid-season break, the last episode, double thumbs up.
Yeah.
Good for you. You guys still got it.
Looking forward to seeing him come back. Don't know what's going to happen next.
Probably, he's going to call Saul at some point.
I think so. I would hope so.
At least he better.
Yeah.
Hey, John, what do you want to watch next time? You in the mood for anything?
Well, right now I'm in the mood for some sleep.
Do you have a need for anything?
Oh, I could use a good quality insole for my shoe.
What else do you feel the need for?
I don't want to admit this on air, but speed.
All right, Barry Allen, I guess we can do it. We're watching Ezra Miller's The Flash.
God bless that man, that hero.
Oh, did that not come out? Oh, my mistake. Oh, I guess we should probably just do Top Gun then, huh?
I'd rather do Top Gun if we
could. So John wants some top, and we're going to do it. We're going to watch Top Gun 1986, the one without John Hamm in it. Featuring
that's the only
really cool, known really cool guy that believes in something totally rational, Tom Cruise.
Uh-huh.
And known really cool guy that believes in something very rational, Val Kilmer.
Yes.
And, I don't know, some other people.
Goose. He's there. Tim Robbins is in it.
Really?
Yeah. He's one of the guys. He's one of the fly boys.
Excellent. Well, I hope they were going to fly into the danger zone and watch a movie from when we were six.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll save that. But I've got a beef with that song. So I'll save that for the episode.
Yeah, planes don't go on highways, bro. Here is something I would like to tell you guys. If you have a social media account and like the show, please post about it. Say hey, I like the show. Or a retweet. Or if you're having that conversation you have awkwardly with that guy at work, hey, so what are you listening to? You know, any cool podcasts? Just tell them about our show.
Yeah.
And then more people will listen. And the more people that listen, the less I have to do this. So really, you're paying yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to start a whole MLM JAHS.
Oh, thing. like a pyramid scheme. A triangle of success.
I know it's more like a diamond cut in half and then folded in on itself.
Uh huh.
It's a multi-level mm-hmm. marketing kind of organization.
But it's a funnel. That funnels success.
Yeah, much better. It's a funnel. It's a funnel. It's an upside down funnel of success.
Yes.
That I need you to participate in. So, yeah, tell your friends, do the thing, rate, review, subscribe, do all that stuff. Because, I have low self-esteem. My life has not worked out that well. And this that small little bit of dopamine might be what keeps me away from the streets. And, you know, I thought you supported the houseless. So, you know, maybe tell your friends about the show.
A lot to unpack there. And you can do that by commenting on our page. You can try to work that out publicly by commenting on our
I thought that line of logic worked great.
No, it's great. It's solid.
One-to-one. All right, well, we'll see you next time, except for the people that got so annoyed with what I just said and don't come back.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Goodbye.